So hello and welcome to a very special episode of the Economics Design Podcast. My name is Enzo. I'll be your host for today. And this episode is really special because this is probably the first face-to-face episode or face-to-face podcast for the channel. And we're here in Manila today for the YGG Web3 Gaming Summit. And with us is CEO of Mirai Labs, Corey Wilton. Corey, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so just as a start, like, can you tell our viewers a little more about who Corey Wilton is? So, like, a quick introduction, maybe tell us what you were doing before crypto and how you found out about, like, the Web3 scene.
All right. Again, you know my name, Corey. I'm from Australia. I live half Australia, half Vietnam. That's where our studio is. And I guess maybe 10% Philippines. Before Web3... So I got into Web3 in about 2017 with the ICO hype, just like a typical guy who sees Ripple and thinks it's going to go to the moon. Didn't, unfortunately. but anyway, actually I sold the day before it had its first initial pump, so should have been a red flag from there that I wasn't made for this, but that's all right. Before all of that, actually I graduated high school in 2014 and then just went straight into sales. Attempted my first company there, which was Dollar Shave Club. It was the first $1 billion e-commerce sold store. So attempted to do a female version of that, failed miserably, very, very badly, but then just kept trying. And in 2017, when I first got into crypto, that was like my first proper company. We did a customer support company for crypto startups, essentially. So ICOs had a lot of money, but they had a community as well and no support. So we just dove straight in, and that's kind of my connection to the Philippines, actually. Just had Filipino support agents, and still friends with them. My first agent back then is actually like a co-owner in one of my other companies in Australia now. So deep roots in the Philippines since 2017, and from there... That one through the bull run of 2017, 2018 went really well. And then I met a friend in Australia, and we started Australia's largest toy gun store.
Toy guns?
Toy guns, yeah.
Okay.
And a bit random, I know, but we were just shooting each other with them, and we were like...
So you were competing against, like, Nerf?
Literally identical to that, yeah, except they look real.
Okay.
Like, Nerf is, like, for kids, but this one we were like, you know, these are, like, gel balls, and we shoot each other, and we were like, this actually hurts, and it's fun. So like, let's maybe other people want to buy this shit. So then we launched it, and that blew up very, very quickly. And then after that, that was like 2020 or something like that. We started that 2018, end of 2020. I was like, let me look back at Web3 after hustling that for a bit, and dove into F1 Delta Time. Mm-hmm. If you're familiar from Animoca, that was about it. I was just like, screw it. I like F1 and NFTs, looks like a place I can lose some money, so let's go.
And basically, when you dwelled into that, how did you transition from like going into that NFT collection into being part of Mirai Labs and eventually becoming CEO of the company?
Yeah, great question. I think it's a bit random. I just liked F1 Delta Time, but when they started, they didn't have any tutorials or anything like that. It was like super fresh. So I wanted some friends to play, and I was like, all right, I don't want to explain this shit to you, so I'm going to make a video. Just uploaded it to YouTube. Got like 50,000 views. One of the viewers was my co-founder, and he was like, okay, you want to build a game? And I was like, why would I want to build a game?
I've also never built a game. You were hesitant at first.
Definitely. I was like, firstly, who are you? Like, why do I want to build a game with you? And then it kept talking to him, and I was like, all right, I like you. You're chill. Let's go for it. And then just had the opportunity. That was my CTO. Just had the opportunity to... like, look at the market, be a user, and try to fix some things that we thought could be done better. And then from there, that was like April-ish 2021, just bootstrapped our first initial alpha 2D of Pegasi. And that's what we raised with in October 2021. We showed people the concept, the on-chain rental system. I'm sure we'll talk about that later, but... Then we shipped it, and the rest is history.
Okay, great. And yeah, I'm very much familiar with Pegaxi as one of the first, if not the first, blockchain game for Miran. Am I correct?
Correct, right? Yeah.
But then for those who are not really familiar with the game, can you tell our viewers more about Mirai Labs, about Pegaxi, and of course, a little bit about Petopia as well?
So Axi was in their peak, and we were like, okay, there's clearly something happening here. And when we dove in, it was pretty heavy friction, to be honest with you. So we were like, maybe there's some way that we could solve this, and quite simply solved it. And that's kind of where the traction came from. Like, the game was barely a game, let's be honest here, when we shipped it, because we launched it so early, but we thought we had a solution of some form to what Axie was experiencing, which was like a issue with scale, I guess you could say.
You mentioned friction a bit, so like, I just want to double down on that. And what kind of friction did you see, and like, what was the solution Mirai Labs had for like that particular pain point, I would say?
Sure. I think for people who aren't familiar, in 2021, it was more like an accidental discovery, the scholarship. Someone found a loophole where if you didn't give them access to the wallet, but you gave them the login credentials in Axie, they could play, and then you could give them a percentage of the earnings. And this spiraled, obviously, quite crazy.
The scholarship model?
Yeah. The scholarship model, right? So that was the foundation of the scholarship model. Someone, I wish I could credit him, I can't remember his name, but someone in the Axie community just discovered that, right? And it was amazing. So everybody dove in. But when you have 1,000 teams, that means you have 1,000 wallets and you need to do 1,000 manual payouts. And people's solution was give someone your private keys and they will build a bot that will automatically pay out based on a percentage. But you needed to give out your private keys to the seed to your wallet.
It's really risky.
Basically the opposite of what we tell people to do.
Yeah.
So we were like, all right, for one, people don't want to do that, let alone give away their seed. They just don't want to give out, pay out 1,000 people manually. So there's a problem with scale here. And this isn't a new problem. It's something that can be solved in the real world as well. Why don't we just build an escrow system where everything is on-chain and done for you? And that's what we did, bro. We honestly were just like, all right, we can facilitate a system where it's just a singular wallet. They can rent it out on-chain. And it goes into a contract where there's an agreed percentage share and the payouts are automatic. So people's goals, like the managers, just acquire as many horses as possible and find people to rent it to, let them play. Everything else is handled by us. And it was pretty obvious that that was a solution that people wanted. Yeah.
Actually, that's quite interesting because like I remember talking to you about this earlier, is that in economics design, we have this framework called market design. And one of the core principles there, or one of the characteristics there, is that we look at how can we facilitate better transactions, or basic market congestion, right? Market congestion is basically trying to facilitate better transactions through like advancements in technology, or more basically giving more access to the users so that they could basically transact easier with each other. And because if they could transact easier, there's more earnings for the company or for the blockchain protocol, right? And that system, like that pain point, basically facilitates better transactions, mainly because, again, you're giving it on, it's under a smart contract, if I'm not mistaken, right? So everything's done as fast as it can be, as opposed to like, okay, I should do it manually. And that would take, okay, probably if I'm too busy with work and stuff like that, my scholars might not get,
not
paid
get
time.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. So yeah, that's what we were looking at just from the outside, to be honest. It was a clear friction point and no one had shipped a solution. And we were quite surprised that the Axie team hadn't. To this day, I'm not so sure why. Maybe they just didn't want to facilitate that environment. Obviously, they didn't mean to make the scholarship model in the first place. So maybe that was just their thesis, like, not let it play out quickly, let it play out slowly, or it was a nice friction point to have, and maybe they made the right decision looking back.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay, then before we talk about one of the newer games of Mirai Labs, I just want to focus, since Pegaxi launched in 2021, basically the gaming economies at that time, I want to put particular highlight on what it was like, especially for those who weren't around at that time, right? So I just wanted to ask you, can you describe what game economies look like in 2021 when blockchain games actually started getting like noticed by the world?
I think from the outside in, because I was a user as well, what it looked like, it was a bunch of ignorance in the sense that we didn't consider how vital demand is, or we didn't have the scale weighed in the right direction. We felt as if that people would just, the same people would continue to put more money in, and that the economic loop was self-fulfilling. However, obviously there is people out there who were definitely new and were calling us dumb. But at the time, I think it was just an inability to recognize, because in reality, it was working and it was going up and it was making money and people were making money.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it was like smoke and mirrors in some sense, that it was a false prophecy. We thought that this worked and we should build infrastructure around a thesis that does work. But a lot of the large companies didn't question whether the thesis itself was correct. So yeah, I guess from the outside, it looked as if you play and you make money, and it was a simple equation. No one considered where that money came from. And when it comes in billions, it's
hard to track.
It's hard to figure out. Yeah, like, is this enough to sustain it? However, it leaves faster than it comes, yeah, for sure.
And like, I just also want to highlight one particular economic shock during that time. It was like in the middle of the pandemic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's just at their homes. They couldn't go out. So what could people do? They could play games, right?
The perfect storm.
Yeah, you mentioned perfect storm.
Yeah.
And basically, I also wanted to ask, based on your experience building Mirai Labs, and particularly at that time, Pegaxi, like, what are some positive takeaways that we could learn from these economies? And also, like, what were the mistakes made which we could hopefully avoid when we build out future ecosystems?
Yeah, I think there's some... I'm not so sure there is many, like, what-to-do lessons. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a lot of what-not-to-do lessons, but that's usually how an industry starts anyway. So with the good side of things, I think it was pretty clear that there was demand for some type of monetary game. That involved speculation, and people wanted the ability to speculate. And there was different roles within whatever that system was. So sure, the first version was purely based on speculation, like you want to buy a good Axie team or a good Pega, and you're hoping that it can perform well enough to get a good return, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like slow speculation. I think it was more so that it just proved the point that speculation within a game could work. However, you don't want to push too far into gambling. So that's kind of the gray area, right? And I think that's why a lot of the bigger studios are still sitting on the sideline. Alternatively, on what not to do, I think it was more so like lessons that had already been learnt by big studios, because they didn't move into this space. It was rookie studios like us. Basically, every studio in the space was a rookie, right? So a lot of the mistakes that needed that happened would come down to like treasury management. Like, they just spent money crazy on the most stupid shit that you could imagine. Expanding too quickly, not being able to ship the game. It's just shit that shouldn't happen in a mature industry. But in hindsight, it's easy to see that. But when you're in the thick of it, unfortunately, it is not clear at all.
Yeah, so thank you so much for that, Corey. And basically, that gives us an overview of like what 2021 looks like. Let's try and move into the future, or like move into more of the present. And like, what do you see in terms of blockchain gaming economies that are probably improvements from what we had in 2021? Of course, in 2021, that was when the industry first started. Of course, there's a lot of questions, but then at least we had something to work on, right? So we had a model. It's more of building on that model to find something sustainable, to find something that could work in the long run. And like, I wanted to ask you, as one of the founders and builders, what are these points that we've improved on since that year, that crazy year of 2021?
Yeah, I think obviously, if we look back, we know what not to do, right? So we're not going to repeat the same mistakes. I'm sure some people who come to the industry now that didn't experience that are going to do the same mistakes. Absolutely. I think as a company, we know the trigger points to get people to move and get the community excited. But the reality is, if we take anything from 2021, it's probably a bad decision. And what I mean is that if you use any of the systems from 2021, you're probably doing it wrong.
Just wanted to clarify, that means that if you're using that exact 2021 model right now, right?
No one will talk about you.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's more so the point. I mean, you were doomed anyway, and you just... They're not going to play the game because they know that. You know what I mean? Like, they were through it. The people who were here went through it. And if they see that same model, they're going to be like, oh, red flag.
There's consumer awareness already.
Yeah. Right? And you're like, you're really missed the boat.
It's 2023. Yeah. Probably 2024 by then, yeah. Right? Like, we're looking at the future of these economies. Mm-hmm. And it's quite interesting because on the drive here, you were talking about, like, something you got from a social app or a social protocol called Frontech.
Yeah.
So can you quickly explain what is this new, new
concept
called SocialFi?
Sure. Very interesting. I think it's, I guess we could call it a speculation game as well, right? And SocialFi is more like monetizing social elements within whatever this the industry is. And Frentech was, I guess, a pioneer in that sense where they monetized a social network. But and that's been happening since like 2017, yeah. Right? There's a lot of them. But Frentech just did it in an interesting way that incentivized speculators and made it fun. Mm-hmm. I think that's the important part here. So there was a lot of key takeaways when looking at Frentech and when I played that it was just like super attractive to me, primarily around the fact that you can speculate and like degen into the platform, right? And that's what a lot of people find fun. So when looking at it and playing it, I was kind of like, all right, what would happen if Frentech was in a game, and what does that look like? So looking at Frentech, they tokenize influencers. In short, people purchase a key in an influencer, which could be considered like a share in the influencer, and they hope that it's going to go up over time. And that influencer uses their influence to promote purchasing those keys so that they can have a closed group of fans. But, you know, the more people who buy, the higher the key price will go. So as a speculator, I'm going to try to get in early or try to make a good trade. I know I can lose for sure. It's just like buying a token, but it's still something that I want to play. I'm willing to lose, right? And I think that would be really, really interesting inside of a game. So we've adopted it into what we are going to call like guild tech, essentially, and tokenization of guilds inside of a game.
Okay, so basically that you're one step ahead, because I just also wanted to ask you, okay, so this whole SocialFi thing that you say you got some notes from Frentech, basically how does that relate to blockchain games, or how could you apply that aspect or that, I would say, phenomenon into blockchain gaming?
Tough, definitely tough. When I wrote it down, I mean, I'm sitting there we were having a gathering with all of our POs and our leadership team, and we're just like brainstorming, and I'm just sitting there and I write Frentech in games on a piece of paper, and I had this initial model and I was like, that sounds effing fun, like amazing. And then I wrote it down and I was like, okay, that doesn't work. It was a lot more difficult than I had suspected, because obviously a KOL or an influencer is an individual person. So they're just like an entity within this ecosystem. But in reality, a guild has 100 members, thousands of members. Like, how can you tokenize something like that? And it just came down to making that guild an entity inside this ecosystem, right? And I think it clicked for you in the car when I was explaining it to you as well, where if this guild is an entity within this ecosystem, people are going to buy fractions and hopefully speculate on the performance of that guild within this game ecosystem.
So essentially, it's like buying shares in a company, but then that company is a guild inside the ecosystem.
I would say, I mean, like same as Frentech, right? Like
yeah.
They would consider the influencer a company or something like that. How you compare it or help you understand it is up to you guys. However, for us, we like to look at it as fractionalizing the guild, but only specifically within that game. And it's not external to the ecosystem. Like each game, every time this guild participates within a game, it is unique. So the guild YGG inside of Pegasi is one entity. YGG inside of Petopia is another entity, independent, which is really, really interesting.
So that's actually quite interesting, because like we have this thesis of having Web3 gaming economies, like being digital nations, mm-hmm. and like we could relate it to how, for example, regional economies, like countries, have their own economy as well. Mm-hmm. So you could treat as, for example, Pegaxi or YG in Pegaxi could be like YG in one country, or a mm-hmm. guild in one country, or a company in one country, while YGG in Petopia is like that same guild, but then has a sister company in a different country, right?
Like, so almost identical, yes. Yeah. And the performance of them in this country doesn't affect the performance of them in this country, mm-hmm. and that's the ecosystem that we want to have. Because if, for example, your players within the guild are really, really good at Petopia and not good at Pegasi for some reason, your fraction price of your company inside that game would not affect the other game, vice versa. So if you think you're going to dominate just Petopia, go and dominate Petopia, right? If you think you can dominate both, go and dominate both. But either way, whatever you perform this month won't affect the other game.
Okay, and I just want to double down on that tokenization of that guild concept. Basically, if you could talk about, okay, what is the main economic loop there? What are the different entities inside, or who are the different entities inside that ecosystem that could benefit
sure.
from the value generated? And like, how is the value how does value flow as a whole, like through that mechanic?
Mm-hmm. I think, I hope I can explain it because it's so new. Hopefully I can explain it in a way that makes sense to people. But from the outside, when what we're looking at here is that it is a positive flywheel, I guess is always the mission here, where each entity, the entities being the players, the guild founder, and the speculators, mm-hmm. each of their actions motivates the other to take a new action. So in this scenario, I think a good example is, let's use YGG again. Everyone knows YGG. And let's say in this game, they join Petopia and people are like, beautiful, I want to be a part of YGG. I want to, I guess, support YGG, and I think they're going to do well in Petopia. They're going to come along and buy the fractions of YGG, and because they want to, but also the fact that they're speculators, they want to be in early.
Mm.
The fraction price is going to go up over time if more people purchase it. It's based on a bonding curve almost identical to what you experience at Frentech. So they know that they're going to get in early if they notice it at an early stage, or if YGG does well, people are going to speculate it in the future anyway, they can sell for a higher price. So speculators come in, they start purchasing these fractions. And the way the money is distributed is also similar to Frentech. 5% of all the trading fees is going to the guild. Fundamentally a business model. They earn revenue just for speculators buying their fractions. 5% goes to Mirai, us who created the game. And then 90% goes to a trading liquidity pool. So these fractions, this is why I make it a little bit complex for some people who are not familiar with it, but these fractions can be traded instantly via liquidity pool, not peer-to-peer.
Mm-hmm.
Similar experience to what people have on a decentralized exchange. You buy a token and you swapped it for Ethereum. Instant. You don't even worry about it. Exact same system for these fractions. So that explains the fraction side. And as you could see, the guild is generating revenue because people are trading their fractions. And at the same time, this guild is competing within our game ecosystem on big leaderboards. So what we do, because you know we earn 5% off of every transaction in the game, we put 10% of our entire revenue up into the global leaderboard that the guilds mm-hmm. are competing for. So let's say in a month we make $1 million. And for context, Pegasi made almost $500,000 in a day. So $1 million in a month is decent for a studio our size, is enough. $100,000 is going to the global leaderboard just for that month that all the guilds are competing for. And let's say YGG comes first and we give 3% to YGG. They get $30,000 for the guild just for winning the leaderboard. And let's say they generated $10,000 in fees, $20,000 in fees for easier math, from people buying their fractions that month. So $50,000 in that month. The three entities, so you have the guild founder, the players, and of course the speculators. They get a percentage split based on what the guild manager, the guild founder, dictates. So he might be like, 20% of that $50,000 is going to go to the fraction holders. 20% is going to go to me, the guild founder, and then 60% is going to be distributed between the players. Now, if 50,000, 20% is 10,000, it's going to go 10,000 is evenly distributed between the fraction holders. Incentive for fraction holders to come and buy, right?
Yep.
The fraction price may go up. Alternatively, another 10,000 goes to the, I founded the guild, so I'm going to get $10,000. I go and blow it on shitcoins, do whatever I want. And then the remaining $30,000 gets distributed between your players, which there's a maximum of 50 in a guild inside the game, but it's not evenly distributed. It's based on performance. So for example, let's say one player does 80% of the work inside of your guild. They would get 80% of that $30,000, which is a shit ton of money, to be clear. And I'm just saying this as an example, but in reality, that guild member has likely joined for about $1 to stop bots. That's what we set it at. And they just earned over $10,000 easily. That's play to earn on a ridiculous level. So the way we look at this is that players are incentivized to be extremely good within this ecosystem. They want to earn money and their investment is very, very small. They just need to be good at the game. So it's skill-based for them. The guild founders obviously want to dominate the game. They also want to try to become famous to get people to speculate on their guild. And then fundamentally, the speculators, they're degens. They're hoping that the fraction price will go up, right? So that's kind of where the economic loop here does sit.
Yeah, so it's nice because like you've outlined some of like some personas, I would say, and some different key people inside the ecosystem. Mm. And one of the like, and you basically created also like a game inside the game, right? Mm. Like something that appeases those who want to speculate, basically the traders,
like non-players.
Yeah, non-players, right? And we know that basically all blockchain gaming ecosystems will have that investor archetype or that non-player archetype inside the game.
Like,
right?
It's already there. If we think about back to the original 2021 thesis,
yep,
these guilds were going to play inside the ecosystem and they took VC money. Mm-hmm. The VCs thought that was a good investment to invest into these guilds. So this is just like a permissionless system where these guilds don't even need VC money. We've given them a business model within this system. They just need to go out there and make money for their guild. No need for VCs, but it's highly possible that a VC is going to recognize this and buy early fractions in the biggest guilds. Like,
yeah.
Why wouldn't they, right? An ecosystem like this is just, again, similar to what we did in the original version, right, where renting wasn't streamlined, efficient or anything. We made it streamlined and efficient. It's pretty clear that people want to speculate on a guild's performance, right?
Or people just want to speculate inside the game in general.
And not play.
And not play.
Like VCs did. Well, you can do that now. And I think that's obviously a ridiculous amount of money. And the fact that we put a large amount of that money back into this ecosystem to drive the motives of the other two core players, I think is going to be an incredible loop. Obviously, we don't know. This, it hasn't launched. So I might be very wrong looking back on this, but from the outside, it looks fun.
And like you mentioned earlier, you guys are willing to take the risk, right?
Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah, we're going to take, I think that obviously this is what we're speaking about in the car, innovation. Someone needs to take the risk here. The big dogs seem to move slower. So being nimble, YOLO, let's go. Easiest way to put it.
That's one way of looking at it. And yeah, basically for the remaining time we have, I just also wanted to ask what are some, like this is one main way for Mirai Labs to like future-proof gaming economies or like the gaming economies of the games that you're trying to build. But I would like to ask as well, like in terms of what you see in the industry, what are some economic trends that could, or economic model trends or just trends in general for the GameFi space or blockchain gaming space that you see as a positive note and really good for the industry as a whole?
To be honest, the one that we're most bullish on is the one that we're building. So I would be a little bit biased there. And that's actually where the idea came from, because I needed to ask that exact question maybe 6 months ago. I think people had ruled out Web3 gaming coming back in because they couldn't foresee, they couldn't see a vision of
like what next.
Like, yeah, it was basically not happening, right? And SocialFi validified something that was there. And a nimble studio should react quickly to take advantage of something, because we want to survive as a studio, right? So that's basically what we did. And trends-wise or seeing some green flags, to be honest, I think it's going to revolve around not having tokenized economies, native tokens, like avoiding that. So if you're earning a native token, probably not going to do well for the token. I think we learned that. Looking at something like, at least at this time, Blur has just launched their L2. That's essentially gamifying the entire launch system as well. I think what you're going to see is that games are going to utilize different strategies for Web3. If our system works, expect it to be cloned 100 times. And at the same time, they're going to adopt launches similar to what Blur had done. I just do not see it being integrated back into the game economy like it was in the original version, because I don't think any studio has enough money to control in an economy that is not... They don't, you know, like, other people own the tokens and the price. We don't dictate it. How can you control that economy? And inside of a game, we need 100% control of the economy. I just don't see it happening in that route. So the way we interact with Web3, the future will be different. I'm almost certain of it. I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure.
99.9.
Yeah, I will bet that much on it, but I'll leave 0.01%.
Willing to lose that money, but then really bullish on that, right?
Super bullish, bro. Super bullish on that, yeah. And I'm hoping that other people... Actually, I know for a fact that there is other people building a similar thesis to us. Probably not the same model, but they're building a very similar thesis around SocialFi inside of gaming. So, I would say green flag for anyone who has recognized that. Respect to them.
Great, great. And probably as a last two questions first, can you like give, are you comfortable in like giving some of your predictions of like what blockchain gaming will look like probably like 5 years down the line?
I think this is actually going to repeat and continue to repeat, because fundamentally, as the type of players that we are and the type of studios that we are, I think we like building new experiences, and that's usually the scenario in the entertainment world anyway. The games release a new concept, a new way, a new game design. For example, like COD was just COD, where it was teams versus teams, and then there Battle Royale came into a thing, so they integrate Battle Royale, right? So I think it's going to be similar to us. We had Play to Earn V1, and now you're going to have like Guild Tech, which is Play to Earn V2. And then that may not work completely forever. Like, the original Call of Duty just isn't popular anymore, right? So I'm pretty sure it's just going to go in cycles like this, bro. And either it's going to be a two-yearly thing. So 2 years this works, 2 years this works, 2 years this works. But I think it's just taking there's going to be studios who catch the trend every single time because they build the trends. There's just going to be studios who jump on whenever they see the trend taking off. So I honestly couldn't tell you what the future's going to hold, but... I mean, being biased and betting our entire company on it, I would hope that the next one is this one.
Hopefully. Okay, and probably as a last question, I know that Mirai Labs is also building a new game, so probably you would like to talk about Petopia.
Sure.
That new game, and probably if you can talk about how different the game is in terms of its economy compared to the first game that you built.
Sure. So Petopia is inspired by Arch Hero and Brawl Stars. We love the dungeon crawling of Arch Hero and the Brawl Stars mechanics and controls. Yeah, we just love that. So that's where the inspiration came from. So expect a hybrid game between both of those. And fundamentally, it is just like a roguelite game. And typical progression, what you would expect from a free-to-play mobile game, has in-app purchases, in-app advertising, all of it, like a traditional studio should. How this applies, I guess we have also... I don't know when this will be released, but we've built like a infrastructure ecosystem around it as well. So obviously we have Mirai Chain, we've got Mirai App, which is, does all of the Web3 type of stuff, Mirai Wallet, Mirai ID, which is for all the logins. So we've built a pretty robust infrastructure, which with the goal of making the user experience not hidden, but like no bullshit. Like, you know exactly what you're doing and it'll pop up and be very, very smooth. So that's obviously the mission, and integrating SocialFi, what we're calling Guild Tech, on top of that ecosystem, and enabling all of the infrastructure so that the speculators can come in, the players can do management, the guild managers can manage their guild, and a whole bunch of perks on top of that as well. So that's obviously the gist of it. And then what's different? Don't expect anything from the original model, to be honest, bro. It's just not the same anymore. This is like fundamentally all new. There is no earning in tokens. It's all ETH. Money in, money out is all ETH. No native tokens or anything like that. Sure, there might be staking and stuff of PGX in the future. Absolutely. There will be some involvement in maybe new tokens or something like that in the future. NFTs as well. There's no NFTs at the start, to be clear. It's a free-to-play mobile game. And if you want to start a guild, it's $1 to stop bots. If you want to join a guild, the guild owner does dictate the price, but they can sell it for $1 if they wanted to. So that's about it. At best, it's $1 to get started, or you just download the game and play it for free and don't participate in the guild system.
Okay. And there you have it, guys. You've heard it here first on the Economics Diet podcast that Mirai Labs is building something new and something that could potentially be a game changer in the Web3 industry or in the blockchain gaming industry as well. That's a cool economic loop. And yeah, I mean, pretty excited on like what you guys ship out in the future as well. And thank you so much for everyone who listened in and who's viewed this podcast. It was such a delight to have CEO of Mirai Labs, Corey Wilton, here with us. And till next time, please like and subscribe to our channels to get the latest information, latest podcasts, and latest videos on everything related to economics, especially in the Web3 space. I'm Enzo, and this has been a pleasure. And Corey, thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.